This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Show. Orion Samuelson in the driver's seat this morning. Looking forward, as we do every week, to spending at least an hour with you on Saturday morning at 5 o'clock. And Max Armstrong taking the week off, but I do have some interesting people who'll be talking to me this morning. First of all, going to share with you some of the thoughts of Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack as he looks back at the year just ending and things that were done and were left undone. And I'm going to talk markets with Steve George of Allendale, because we had just a 3.5-day trading week this week. But what happened as we go into the final trading week of the year 2015? And then on a personal note, I'm going to talk to the gentleman who gave me the best present I could get this year. It came a few months before Christmas, but it was a repaired heart. Dr. Sam Balke of the University of Chicago Medical Center performed the surgery, and I found it not only fascinating because of what it did for me, but what it does for animal agriculture and its role in human health. So I'm going to let him tell you about that later this morning as we talk about not bypass surgery, but doing repair work on heart valves. Stay with us as we continue on the Saturday Morning Show. It has become an annual tradition. At the end of the year, I travel to Washington, D.C. and spend some time in the office of the Secretary of Agriculture, looking back at the year just ending and looking ahead to the year we're about to enter. So about 10 days ago, I traveled to our nation's capital, sat down with Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, who has joined me for more of these year-end visits than any other secretary in that 37 years. And we talked about the year just ending and what I considered one of the top stories of the year, and it came early: avian influenza, bird flu. As I sat down with Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, I asked him if we were ready for that surprise outbreak.
Well, I'll tell you, I think it hit us pretty hard, but I think we reacted fairly quickly. We learned a lot of lessons, and frankly, we'll be much better prepared should it reemerge. We spent and invested about $800 million helping our producers, 232 commercial operations in 21 states who were devastated by this, sort of get through the process. We learned a lot of lessons. We've got to be quicker, determining. If we have a reemergence, we have to be much quicker in terms of depopulating flocks. We've got to pay a good deal of attention to biosecurity on the farm. We have tweaked our indemnification program just a bit, and we've also been able to identify a vaccine. We're in the process of stockpiling it. I don't know whether we'll ever use it. If we do, it'll probably be in a very targeted way. But I think we are much better prepared today than we were 12 months ago.
And fortunately, the expectation of a rerun in the fall migratory season hasn't occurred.
Not yet. Every day we test, and we will continue to test. Our concern now is that this may be more of a spring, early summer type of activity. And so we want to be very vigilant as the winter proceeds and as we get into that early spring migratory patterns back up north. We want to make sure that we are as vigilant as we have been in the last couple of months.
So let's talk RFS. We finally got the word from EPA, and I haven't found many people on either side happy about it.
Well, I am, because I think it's important to put it in the context. Look, EPA listened to the concerns that were expressed about the low volume numbers, and they increased the numbers across the board. We're seeing a record amount of ethanol being produced. We're now seeing near or almost record amounts of ethanol being exported. China just had its largest purchase in quite some time, maybe an historic purchase. India is now expressing an interest as a result of a trade mission that we had earlier this year. We're going to continue to see ethanol being produced. We're going to continue to see the benefits of that industry. And I think that EPA has put us on a glide path to continue towards that statutory level. I would say that we are also excited about the opportunity that we created here at USDA to partner with the industry to establish a better distribution of this fuel so that higher blends are more readily available to consumers. Our $100 million blender pump effort was matched by $121 million of additional commitments from the industry. We're now looking at potentially 5,000 more distribution areas or distribution outlets for this higher blend of fuel, 15%, 30%, 85% ethanol. So we're going to continue to see demand for this. We're going to continue to see, I think, an important and prosperous industry, and I think we're going to continue to look for ways in which we can expand this. Very excited about the marine and aviation fuel opportunities that exist. We're seeing more cellulosic facilities come online. The biodiesel activities are strong. So I think on balance, we're in better shape than I think a lot of people thought we would be. You know, in the farm country, we're almost never satisfied.
True.
But I think if you actually sat down and talked to folks, they'd say, you know, it's certainly better than what we understood might have been the numbers. And we need to continue to work to protect this industry from those who would like to get rid of it.
As Secretary of Agriculture, you have been the strongest proponent for this renewable fuel energy area, and you still feel very strong.
I do, and the reason I do, first, it's consumer choice, less expensive gas for the consumer. It's jobs, hundreds of thousands of jobs in rural areas. It's more stable prices for our farmers by creating greater demand. It is also helping on the export side, reducing our reliance on foreign oil and now providing another export opportunity for American-made products. And it's better for the environment. The reason why India and China are interested in this fuel is because it will help them with their air quality concerns. And now we're seeing a real concerted effort on the commercial aviation side and on the Defense Department side of purchasing biofuel and the need for biofuel. So I think the future for this industry is strong, and it's positive, and I'm optimistic.
Will the climate agreement in Paris have any impact on that?
Well, I think agriculture played a critical role in getting the agreement, and I think U.S. agriculture in particular. We identified earlier this year what we refer to as 10 building blocks, 10 ways in which we can work with agriculture to reduce emissions, and that allowed President Obama to talk very forcefully to China and India about making commitments, which ultimately led to 190 some countries agreeing on a framework for reduced emissions, make it a bit more climate-friendly globe. That's going to help us in the long term, and I'm very proud of the role that agriculture is playing and will continue to play in mitigating and adapting to a changing climate.
Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack with a look back at the year ending and what he considered to be accomplishments of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We'll share his look ahead next week on the Saturday morning show, so I hope you'll be with us for that. And we will hear from him a little bit later this morning, as it no longer is Samuelson says, one weekend a year, it will become the Secretary says. That coming up later here on the Saturday morning show. Joining me on the line this morning, the day after Christmas, the best Christmas gift I got all year happened in September when my heart was, well, let's find out what happened to my heart. Dr. Sam Balke, who is a surgeon at the University of Chicago Medical Center. Good morning, sir, and thank you for what you gave me earlier this year.
Good morning, sir. Good to be with you.
So let's talk about the operation that put a cow valve and a pig valve in my heart. And it's interesting, by the way, it's like when you buy a new car, then every car you see on the road is like yours. I've heard of more people who have had heart surgery now than ever before in my history. And that's kind of what happens. But tell us what you did back on September 14th to me.
Sure, sure. Well, first of all, I'll preface it with the statement that you came looking for a less invasive operation for what we had thought, or what you had thought, and your doctor, was a single valve problem in the aortic valve, which was a tight blockage in the aortic valve. And when we did further studies, we uncovered some problems in the second valve, which is called the mitral valve. And that kind of made it a little bit difficult to do a less invasive operation. And so we convinced you to sit still long enough for us to be able to do a double valve replacement, which takes a little bit longer time. But in the end, we ended up replacing both valves, one of them with a cow valve in the aortic position and the other one with a pig valve in the mitral position.
Well, I've gotten many questions since that time because agriculture is my specialty, and here's an area where agriculture does play a role in human health, doesn't it?
Indeed. Indeed it does. We have been able to leverage the cardiac structures of our fellow mammals to be able to treat some serious problems without which many people would not be able to have a fulfilled life orient. And this has been going on for decades now. And the new advances are even more exciting, where we're doing, you know, genetic engineering and tissue modulation to be able to create these valves in the lab. But so far, for now, one of the big mainstays is using animal valves.
Now, the question, too, that I asked and has been asked by several people, are there farms and ranches that specifically do this, or can we go to anybody to get this organ for whatever you're going to do with it?
Well, you know, there's companies, medical device companies, that specialize in manufacturing these valves, and they undergo very, very rigorous quality assurances from the likes of the FDA and the regulatory bodies. And so it's not every place or every farm, if you will be amenable to this. So these medical device companies basically identify areas where, you know, the farmers, or I guess you know, the folks that take care of these animals grow them in a certain way. And in your situation, the cow valve that we used was probably raised in somewhere in Idaho, possibly. The company that makes it is out of Southern California, and they basically raise these baby steer for about 48 hours or so, and then manufacture the valves from the tissues of the lining of their heart.
So you decide that you need one of these valves, like tomorrow, for surgery. How do you order it, and why does it fit? Is it specifically designed for what you need?
Well, that's a very good question. The companies have looked at the various sizes of human valves and have manufactured maybe 7 to 10 sizes of each type of valve. And so we buy them, or the hospital buys them, in bulk, and we put them on the shelf. And we have one or two of each size that's available at all times. And when we use one, we take it off the shelf, we open it out of its sterile container, and we implant it, if you will. And then once that one has been used, we replace it with another one of the same size, so that we always have a full complement of sizes and we're ready for anything that we may face.
How many surgeries will you do in a year or a week or a month or whatever?
Probably just around 200 or so. It waxes and wanes over the years. I've been in practice since 1997, and I think, you know, a busy year for me would be up to close to 300. But on average, it's in the 200 range. And, you know, some surgeons are much, much busier, and you need some help to be able to do more than, you know, a certain number of procedures a day, so you need somebody to help you kind of open and close and that kind of thing. And so if you have that, you can manage a little bit more. In my specialty, which is less invasive and robotic, the procedures take a little bit longer, so we end up doing maximally two a day.
And you do have a good team, Dottie, McKenzie, Brooke, Cotty, and what a team they turned out to be. And from the standpoint of how long it takes, how long was I in the operating room?
Well, I don't recall exactly, Orion, but I would say that usually the anesthesia time is about an hour to an hour and a half for them to put the lines in, and then the actual surgery takes about 5 hours to 6 hours, depending on how difficult it is to remove the old valve and how difficult it is to expose things. But that's usually about the time, if I recall. Your surgery ended probably in the early afternoon. And you were pretty quick in recovery, I got to tell you. We did the surgery, I think, on Monday, and you were ready to get out of there by Thursday, and definitely Friday morning, I think, is when we discharged you. So you did very well.
5 days, but if you do the robotic less invasive, I've seen stories of your patients walking out in 2 days.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Yeah. It's not uncommon for somebody who didn't have their chest cracked open, for example, to have a bypass procedure with the robot or a valve repair with the robot, and then they'll leave the hospital in 2 days or 3 days sometimes. So it does definitely decrease the amount of time in the hospital and decreases the amount of time that it is needed to recover fully to get back to a physical job.
Well, I can't thank you and your team enough, and I'm doing well, and I think I'll probably be pretty much back to normal in another month or so. So thank you very much for the best gift I could get for this holiday season.
Well, you're very welcome, and Merry Christmas to you and the family, and I wish you a prosperous and healthy new year in 2016 from myself and from the team who you mentioned their names. They're very, very vital to our process here.
Dr. Sam Balke at the University of Chicago Medical Center, who, as I said, gave me a great Christmas present about 4 months early. But as I'm now approaching 4 months after the surgery, energy is pretty well back. And so I share the story with you, first of all, because I found the role of animal agriculture in human health very interesting. But I've encountered a lot of people who apparently are facing bypass or valve repair or whatever, and just be grateful, as I am, that we live in this time and age when we have the medical technology, when we have the crop technology, when we have the energy technology to do what we're able to do. We can remember with fondness the good old days, but I wouldn't want to be living in the good old days if I had this type of surgery to go through, because I remember very well I was working in Appleton Radio, Appleton, Wisconsin, back in 1955, and the county agent was a good friend of mine, I think about 42 years old, had to have open heart surgery. There wasn't a great deal of open heart surgery being done at that time, but he had the surgery and it worked and everything. But he was immobilized for about 6 months, when about all he could do was get up and go to the bathroom. Far different cry from today, since I walked out of the hospital in 5 days. And after 3 weeks of watching all of the black and white reruns of Gunsmoke, I decided, that's it, I've got to get back into some activity. And so was able to start working from home and doing some of my broadcasting from there. And as I mentioned earlier this month, the first 2 weeks of December, did 7 speaking engagements in towns throughout Minnesota, handled it all very well. I share this with you to tell you, yes, you can be concerned, but know that you're in good hands with doctors like Dr. Balke and other people who do similar type surgery. And again, thanks to Dr. Balke and his staff for the great care, not only great medical care, but they're just nice people, and they're fun to talk to. And so even though this episode is over, I plan to stay in touch with them and find out what's going on with this technology. Well, it's been a shortened holiday trading week, 3.5 days of trade this week. Some people wondering, what about next week? No, we don't have a similar situation with trading hours. We will trade 4 days next week, and then we'll be closed on Friday, January 1st. And no early closing on New Year's Eve Day. Oh, and one other email question. The president of RFD-TV, who has had me do the Tournament of Roses parade for the last 4 years, suggested that maybe I should take a year vacation. So I'll not be doing the Tournament of Roses this year on RFD-TV, but I'll skip a year and be back again next year. Well, we're approaching the halfway mark here on the Saturday morning show, and good to have you with us on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. Good morning again, and welcome to part two of the Saturday morning show. Delighted to have you join us every week between 5 and 6 on Saturday morning, as we take a look at some of the highlights in the world of agriculture and agribusiness here on WGN Radio Chicago. We'll be talking markets in just a few minutes with Steve Georgi of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, as we take a look at a shortened 3.5-day trading week and another short trading week coming up next week, when we close just on New Year's Day. No early closing on New Year's Eve Day, but on New Year's Day we will be closed markets around the world. Right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, but this week I take a vacation, and it will be the Secretary Says.
Samuelson Says, the views and commentary of Orion Samuelson.
Well, if you need an easy way to keep your toilet bowls rust-free, I have the answer for you this morning. It's Rust Guard. Rust Guard is the in-tank toilet bowl cleaner that protects against rust and hard water stains with every flush. It does the job better than any other. Just drop one Rust Guard tablet in the tank. That's all it takes, and it's really that easy. Rust Guard is safe for plumbing and septic systems, and it will not harm pets. So don't be concerned about stains on your toilet, because there's a product that'll take care of it for you. Think Wink, and then log on to wink.com. That's WHINK.com, and check out all of the fine cleaning products that will make your day easier.
Now, with this week's Samuelson Says, here's Orion.
For several decades, I have been sharing with you on a weekly basis my personal thoughts, opinions, and prejudices on Samuelson Says. I do that every week. I don't expect you to agree with me or to disagree with me, but I do want to stimulate your thinking and perhaps have you take a look at various issues from a different point of view. But there is one weekend a year that I take a vacation from Samuelson Says, and I rename the program The Secretary Says. That happens at the end of the year. And here are the thoughts for the end of 2015 from Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack.
Well, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak directly to your viewers and to wish them a happy holiday and a Merry Christmas. I want them to take an opportunity to be with loved ones and friends and to enjoy this holiday season and understand how I feel about the future. I'm extraordinarily optimistic and hopeful about the future because of American agriculture. It makes us a safer and better nation. There's a lot of discussion today about terrorism and fear and so forth, but I think of those hardworking farmers and ranchers and their family members working on Christmas Day, on New Year's Day, to make sure that Americans have affordable, accessible, available food. I think about the fact that we're one of the few countries in the world that actually can feed ourselves, that we're not really dependent on anyone. And I think about those families who also disproportionately send their sons and daughters into military service, and those sons and daughters may be away for the holidays. So I just simply want to tell folks that I'm optimistic because I know those hardworking people are going to continue to be there. They're going to continue to provide us with the greatest, most affordable, and available food. I think we're going to continue to be the strongest nation in the world and the freest nation in the world, in part because of American agriculture. So my wish is for all those farmers and ranchers and your viewers to have a very Merry Christmas and a happy holiday. And I look forward to a very successful 2016.
Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack sharing his year-end greetings to the producers of America's food, fiber, and energy. And I would certainly second what he had to say and offer thanks to all of you for taking the risks every day with weather, markets, government, and whatever to produce what you do. Our thoughts on Samuelson Says.
Samuelson Says comes to you each week on this station. Samuelson Says is a presentation of the Tribune Radio Network.
Always a pleasure to visit with the Secretary of Agriculture. And Tom Vilsack will be our first eight-year Secretary of Agriculture since former Minnesota Governor Orville Freeman, who back in 1960 was appointed Secretary of Agriculture by the new president, John Kennedy. And with the change in the administration, Lyndon Johnson moved into the White House, and he kept Orville Freeman there for the rest of the term. So Tom Vilsack joins quite a club. As a matter of fact, I think the secretary said that at this point he is probably about fourth in terms of longevity in the Department of Agriculture. He said he is gaining ground on Henry Wallace, who was Secretary of Agriculture for Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So anyway, always a pleasure to visit with the Secretary of Agriculture, and we'll be sharing next week his look ahead to some of the challenges of 2016. Oh, I did have to ask him one question, and I got a look, and that was about it. But I said, would you go beyond 2 4-year terms? Because if Democrats win the White House next year, they may just want to keep you on. Who knows? And he just kind of raised his eyebrows, gave me a look, and I guess that look said, no, I don't think that will be the case. Well, we're going to talk markets, and joining us on the line will be Steve Gregory, or Steve Georgie, I should say, of the Allendale advisory firm based in McHenry, Illinois. So stay with us for that when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, what about this holiday shortened trading week, and what about the year 2015? We're going to talk about that with Steve Georgie of Allendale in McHenry, Illinois. Throughout the year, we turned to Paul and Rich Nelson and now Steve Georgie to talk about markets. And first of all, a day after Christmas, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year ahead of that holiday. Good to have you with us, Steve.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
So let's talk quickly about the holiday shortened trading week. And, of course, with a long holiday weekend ahead, that tends to make traders nervous because you never know what's going to happen somewhere in the world. But let's look back briefly at this holiday week.
Well, you know, it does make people nervous. And I think that's what you've gotten so far. But right now, as far as the grains in general, we've got a very negative opinion, a negative attitude across the grain markets. The funds are short. There's not a lot of reasons to see the markets rally. And so we've had this grind lower. And that grind lower is continuing. Once again here, this week, falling off a little bit. Probably going to see that as we get closer to the end of the year, unless we get some kind of news or something to feed the bulls again. We're missing that right now. So technically, we're near some good support levels. If those get taken out, we probably can see some further weakness, though, as we get going to the end of the year.
Earlier this month, I spoke at 7 Outlook meetings in towns in Minnesota, and market specialists on the program with me kept talking about the fact that 2015 was a good year for growing crops. But when he asked farmers in the audience how they felt about marketing, they all said, bad year for marketing. Because we have really seen over the last year and a half or 2 years quite a decline in the grain market. And what kind of things can we do to make this change a little bit?
Well, you know, if you go even further back than that, and we start looking, say, 4 or 5 years ago, farmers had become complacent a little bit with the idea that the best marketing was no marketing at that time because the markets were only going up. It is very important, and it has been the last few years. And, you look at Minnesota, you look at Nebraska having these record yields and great crops, like you said. But the big thing is now what do you do with it? So many guys are talking to us and calling in. They've got their bins full, and you have got so much grain that is still in the farmers' hands, not the commercial hands. And so when you look at what do we do with this, well, things are probably still going to get worse as far as price until we see that relationship switch. And once you start getting more of the commercials with more of the upper hand, you start to see the markets recover a little bit. But right now, basis levels have been pretty good. But what's going to happen after the first of the year when you start getting into more of a race of who can sell the grain the fastest? My concern is that what's going to happen January and February as you sit down with the banker and the banker, you start talking operating loans and they say, hey, you know what? You're underwater right now. I can't give you this loan, but you've got all this corn in the bin. Go sell something. Make some sales. And so it may be, as I'm calling it, a banker-forced sell-off because the banker's going to make the producer make sales to get some cash. And that may end up grinding us lower here for the next few months as we get talks with the bankers and things like that. So the outlook short-term is not very good. So if you're a producer that needs to be hanging on to grain or can hang on to it past maybe May, you've got some hope. But short-term here, we may be in some trouble.
And that was also talked about at those Minnesota meetings. The other thing, because somebody said, well, how soon do you think things are going to get better? And one of the analysts said 2017 or 2018. Are we that far out?
You know what? I don't think so. I think we can start to see some kind of a bounce this year. I think there's a lot of things as we go forward from here. There is some hope for next year's crop. Now, old crop that is sitting in the bin, as I mentioned, I think we're going to struggle. But for new crop, you've got a weather scenario that still needs to be played out. And so with that, you've got this El Nino that could switch to a La Nina this coming up year. That's going to be looked at rather closely. Not only that, the funds, as they had mentioned last year, they're going to get out of commodities. Well, guess what? They did. They weren't kidding. They got out of commodities. Are we going to see them now re-enter now that we've got crude oil sitting below $40 a barrel? You've got grain prices that are depressed, metal markets that are sitting at some lows that we haven't seen for several years. Will they look at that as value again and start to come back into our markets and help support it? We need their help in order to do that. And so that may be a real possibility as we go into next year to see them start re-entering our markets once again.
And as we look at the world, it seems like corn, soybeans, wheat, we have more than we can use at the moment, and a strong dollar. Does that all add up to tougher times for our export market?
Well, I think exports is one thing. And I think, yes, when you talk exports, you need to talk about what's going on in South America right now. They're devaluing their currency. That opens up them for better exports again. And that, well, that hurts us here. Right now, corn, we're 25% behind where we were last year as far as exports. And for beans, we're about 12%. So we are behind. But when you look at that, on paper, they're doing a great job. They're doing what they have to do. But is it going to be something that, well, will their infrastructure be able to hold a lot of what they're doing currently? Because how many times do we hear that in the beginning of the year, all these port backups and boat backups and problems as far as, well, just their infrastructure. Can they support that? Yes, it sounds like it's good and it's putting pressure on us, but will that open us up for more exports a little later on? And it may. So there is some hope there, too. But, you know, you look at the big picture around the world, yes, there's a lot of grain out there. We have had number one, number two use for corn, feed and ethanol. Ethanol has been very strong. You can also make the argument that feed usage is better than what it probably looks like on paper, just because the amount of cattle that have been held back and been fed more. Are we going to see an adjustment from that? January 12th, on that report, it may have some excitement if we see a shift as far as feed needs as well. So there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle right now, but looking at exports specifically, well, it doesn't look good. The demand is certainly not there.
You mentioned cattle. You didn't have to go to an amusement park this year to get a roller coaster ride. All you had to do was be a cattleman.
Man.
It's been a crazy market.
You know, it sure has. Cattle as a whole, just over the last 6 months, has been that roller coaster, like you said. But you don't even have to go back 6 months. You can go back just last week. You know, we saw such a depressed market, much like as I talked about the grains, where there's just no positive news. Well, that was cattle last week. There was not a lot of good news. We saw cash markets that were breaking, wholesale beef prices that were in the tank. That has now all changed this week. $6 higher cash trade. You've got wholesale prices that have turned around. You've got one heck of a rally off the lows. And now you've got some of the technicians watching this because we have taken out resistance levels on the chart. That now you've got support of more buyers entering this market, too. It looks very good for cattle here for the short term. This has been one heck of a week for cattle, and we may see some more upside going into the end of the year.
The hog producer has sort of seen the same ride as well as what's going to happen in the pork industry.
Well, you know, it's riding the coattails right now of the cattle, I think. When you look at some of these reports that came out, cold storage report, as well as hog and pigs report, that was friendly, but you still have to remember, we've got a record amount of hogs out there. Can we see some more upside for hogs? Yes, we can. But as far as producers, if we do get those types of bounces, and let's say we go another $2, $3, maybe $4 higher, you may want to consider trying to lock in some of these prices and starting to hedge a little bit. Yes, it does feel good for now, but like I said, we've seen a good bounce. We do have a lot of hogs, and we can't lose sight of that going into the future.
So that pretty well covers what livestock producers should be looking at in the marketplace.
Yes.
What about grain producers? Is there anything they should be doing in January or February?
Yeah, I think that we could see, I think the markets, the grain markets in general, corn, beans, and probably wheat, we could see the markets stay under pressure going through February. And I think that you look at that, if you need to be moving grain, if you need to move grain basically before May, you probably ought to look at doing it sooner than later. It's going to become this thing where I've got to sell this before my neighbor does. Basis levels have been good, as I mentioned earlier. They've been good, but they're probably going to widen out. We know there's a big crop out there, and we know the farmer is hanging on to it. So making some sales, if we get a bounce next week or see some kind of strength going into that January 12th report, you need to be looking at making some sales either cash-wise or get some protection on the board all the way through May.
Final question. When will you be doing your annual survey on acreage to be planted?
We end up doing that as we get to the middle toward the end of February, and then we release that 2 weeks before that acreage report, which is March 31st. And so we've got that coming out, and we'll be doing that as we get into February, trying to collect as much data as we can about that. But here's the thing. When you look at prices as depressed as they are right now, you're probably going to be looking at more bean acres and less corn again for a second year straight. And that may give us a little bit of support for new crop corn if that's the case. Old crop, well, we still have this big struggle ahead of us for old crop.
You're right. Well, thank you very much for your work with us throughout the year. We appreciate it, Steve, and let's hope we get a pretty good year for all the agricultural producers out there. And again, Happy New Year to you and all our other friends at Allendale.
Thank you very much.
Steve Georgie with Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois. Well, just like that, we ran out of time here on the last Saturday morning show of 2015. So we'll take a look at a more detailed calendar next week, but early in the new year, Farm Bureau Convention in Orlando and Farm Foundation meeting in Tucson. I'll be at both of those, and we'll talk about more of them coming up next week. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to all my guests for joining us this morning. And now, on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.